Welcome to the Fatherhood is Lit podcast, where we talk about the best of times, but also pay respect and learn from the crazier times. Our presence matters. Take a ride with us as we show the world how we make our presence felt. Fatherhood is Lit. What's good, Fatherhood? It's your boy James Lopez representing for the dopest dads out there, the Fatherhood is Lit community. Hip-hop doesn't just save lives or uplift people like me, it gives us opportunities. You can represent hip-hop without being a rapper, and today I'm talking to a legend in the game. He is a father before anything, the co-host of Drink Champs, the co-host of Fatherhood's podcast, and many more, which I had the honor of actually being on before. He is the one and only DJ EFN. What's good, man? No sound effects, but what's good?
What's good, homie? What's going on?
Yo, I need to borrow your soundboard, bro, from Drink Champs, man. Like, I need some sound effects. You and Joe Button, man. Y'all got those sound effects on lock.
We trying to make, you know, get through the chaos with some sound effects, you know?
Word, man. You guys got that on lock, man. So first and foremost, bro. Do people call you DJ EFN when they know you, or do they call you Eric, bro? Like, what's good? Like, you got your friends calling you EFN?
The people that know me, like, my crew, Crazy Hood, is made up of mostly friends from high school era. Uh-huh. You know, so we going back to, like, you know, 92, 93. And most of them will call me E. That was what people called me in high school. They called me E. And when they're mad at me, they'll call me Eric, like a parent. You know?
They get you the we got government.
Beef. It's Eric, but it's just E.
Wait, so if it's beef, if somebody scream at you, "Yo, Eric," from across the street, you know it's on? You know it's on site?
Yeah,
now.
Yeah. If it's somebody I know and they say Eric, it's because we got a problem with each other. But normally it's just everybody calls me E.
What about the Spanish side, man? The Cuban side of the family, do they call you E, Eric? What, do they have a nickname for you?
Oh, man. They call me Eric or Eriquito if it's like my aunt or... You know, they still see me as a little kid, and so they, you know, they keep those old little pet names, you know, when you were a little kid. Yeah. But yeah, they call me Eric, you know, in Spanish, Eddie.
Yeah. Now, my mom used to call me Mangasong, man, you know, like, I got used to that. So, you knucklehead, come here. So, it was cool to do, man, but that's dope. So, you out there in Miami now, right, during this pandemic?
Yep, in Miami, Florida, yep.
Yeah, and you came from L.A., bro? Like, you used to live in L.A., and then your family transplanted over there?
Or your dad transplanted? Yeah, I was born in Los Angeles. Yeah, I was born in Los Angeles, and, like, my early, like, you know, really young, like, from baby to about, like, I don't know, maybe 5 or 6. Well, I mean, this is the thing. It's kind of blurry even for me, like, when I really kind of moved over, because what happened is my mom and my dad separated when I was, like, 4 or 5 years old. And my dad moved over to Miami. You know, it was like the heyday of the cocaine cowboys.
Yeah.
And he was out here doing his thing. And they kept trying to work out their relationship. So, like, my mom, we'd move over to Miami. We'd spend, like, I don't know, man, maybe like a year or less. And then we'd fucking jet back to L.A. because shit wasn't, you know, shit was kind of hectic and crazy. Uh-huh. My dad was kind of wild. And then that happened probably, like, 3 or 4 times, man, that I did, like, that move. So... those years are real blurry for me, and like when I finally stayed in Miami, but I like really concrete. No, I was like already like in 6th grade going to 7th. And that's when I like finally just like, we stayed here in Miami.
Yeah. So 2 things. Did your parents, so your parents didn't eventually work it out?
Nah, they got divorced. I mean, they should have fucking got divorced from the first time they separated.
Yo, Spanish people don't do that. Shit on. Spanish people don't do that, bro. They drag it on.
Yeah, nah, and on top of that, you know, my family, my mom's side of the family, I mean, my dad's too, but my mom's side of the family is like devout Catholic. Mm-hmm. At least they were at that time. And they, you know, they don't believe, you know, if you're a devout Catholic, they don't believe in divorce. So no matter how crazy it got, my family on my mom's side, which is the crazy part, was telling her to work it out. And it was, I used to tell my mom as a little kid, like, yo, let's not go back to Miami. That shit is fucking crazy over there. My dad was wilding out. Uh-huh. You know, he's a Vietnam vet, Marine. You know, he, like I said, he was out here up to no good. Uh-huh. And he had, you know, drug and alcohol problems, mostly alcohol, but I know he dabbled in all kinds of shit. And he was just, you know, he was violent and shit was just rough, man.
So you had almost preferred to have lived with moms during that time?
Well, I mean, when we came, my mom, I was always with my mom. Like, I would have preferred to have stayed, like, L.A. I was born in L.A., so as a little kid, L.A. was my home. Everything I knew was L.A. Like, Miami was completely foreign to me. So every time we would come here, and we moved to this area called Kendall, which is where I am still today and I rep today, but it was, like, a newer area at that time, like, being developed. So it almost felt like we lived in the fucking Everglades. And there's monsoon rains. Like, we would come in the summer to Miami, and in LA, it doesn't rain. So we would come here and it would be like fucking monsoon rain. And I'll be like, where the fuck am I, bro? Am I in Vietnam right now? Like, what the fuck is this
It
shit?
was a
And there's
culture
all kinds
shock.
of, yeah, it's like big ass lizards and fucking all kinds of insects and animals and mosquitoes and big ass cockroaches, you know, dinosaur versions of cockroaches out here. And fucking, I remember when I was a little kid, there's a bug called the palmetto bug, which is basically a fucking wild cockroach. It's not the home version. And those motherfuckers have wings. And I was like, yo, the cockroaches have an air force in Miami.
They chasing me down.
Yeah. So at that time, I really did prefer to stay, you know. And I had my aunt, my cousin. I don't have no brothers and sisters. So my cousin, you know, in Spanish we say primo hermano, or primo hermanas, whatever. So my cousin was like my sister, so that was my family unit, was in LA. So I hated it, man. I didn't want to come here. And just, my dad was a scary dude, man. He would have flashbacks from the war. And, you know, as a little kid, it's hard to understand all that shit.
Yo, so you know, being a father is crazy because we get to expose our kids to so much, right? And hearing you say that, it almost feels like your dad was exposing you to good things, right? But you could also like remember a lot of the harder times, right? The rougher stuff. Like, how does that affect how you parent now? Like, do you look back at the things that you went with your dad? Like, I'm sure it was still a good life, but you seen some shit that was wild, right? Like,
I
how do
mean,
you use that and teach?
anything good was, I didn't even, it didn't really count because of how bad it was.
For
Like
real? It
my
overshadowed?
dad,
It got overshadowed by the bad?
yeah, man. I
Okay.
mean, like the only, like the good things I remember of my pops were like after they completely divorced and after a bunch of shit, like years had passed. And then little by little, he would like show face and come around and, you know, we'd go to fucking Toys R Us and he'd buy me some G.I. Joes and we'd be in the hotel because he like even moved out of Miami at one point. And we would, like, you know, he'd sit there and make the fucking G.I. Joe vehicle and we'd play a little bit. Like, those are some of the fond memories I had. And then even later on, you know, like he actually helped contribute to like buy my first turntables. Like, he gave me some bread for it. And, you know, little things down the line, but really it wasn't much good. And even though he was in Miami, he was making money. And when we would come here, I like instantly I felt hood rich. Like, I mean, my dad pulled up in a fucking brand new Corvette. I had my own room. He had like a bunk bed in there, and I, you know, it's just me. So I'm like, oh, I got a fucking bunk bed to
You're
myself. Like,
chilling. You're
you
chilling
know,
up in there.
we lived in a nice house, but, and in LA, we lived in the hood. Like, we lived in an area called Southgate. It was the hood, but you couldn't tell me nothing about that because I felt way more safe, way more comfortable in the hood than over here with my pops, because it was isolated, and my pops was like, every night I'd hear them screaming and arguing and my dad wilding the fuck out. And, you know, imagine a Marine Vietnam vet like talking crazy and speaking Vietnamese and just wilding the fuck out. And that's what I had to endure all those nights here in Miami. So nothing good, you know, would fucking take away how fucking bad it felt. So to answer your question of how that helped, like how I transfer that to me being a parent, is one of the things that I was always scared of is, like, I didn't want to bring in any kids into the world where there was a chance that, you know, like, I wanted to have the best chance for that relationship to work. And B, I don't want my kids to hear me arguing with their mother, which is harder for me to do. Like, now in reality, like, as much as I don't want that, me and my girl still argue in front of my
Yeah,
kids sometimes.
it's natural.
But for me, I'm so shell-shocked from, because those arguments, like, were just so wild back then. And it was just more than arguments, it was just violence. And I'm so shell-shocked from back then that it still puts, like, it makes me think my daughter right now, and I got one on the way, that if she sees us, hears us arguing, or sees arguing, that it's going to shell-shock her as well. So, like, it still bothers me. So I try not to.
It's hard because I you know, I was raised in the South Bronx, and same thing with my dad. Like, my dad was an army dude, you know, Vietnam. He was a manly dude, you know what I mean? Like a super, you know, chest out all the time type of tough dude. And him and my mom, they used to go at it too, but they never, like, he never got physical with her, but he got physical with my, like my stepbrother, right? And I used to see them fight all the time, and that's something that always stuck with me, where it's like, now with my kids, I could look at it and say, yo, my dad was dope, he was a good dude, but those are the things I don't want my kids to learn about. You know what I mean? Where it's like, I don't want them seeing me argue with people, which they see all the time, but I want them to understand why it's done. And it's funny to hear that, because sometimes we as dads, people look at us and they say, yo, you're the superhero. And sometimes we're not. You know what I mean? Like, sometimes we're not the superheroes.
Most of the time we're not.
Yeah, and then it's crazy because sometimes they could be present, but they're still not superheroes. You know what I mean? And it's just wild because I try to look at some of the negative things my dad does. Like, he's done so much more positive than negative, but the negative still sticks with me. And that's the, yo, don't talk to women like this. Don't ever raise your hand at them. You know what I mean? Like, those little lessons. But then you took it a step further, and you went into hip hop, bro. Like, you Cuban, man. You Cuban B, right? Like, you're Cuban. Like, you're Cuban, you're light skinned. You took it into hip hop and you became known as like the hip hop king or the mixtape king of Miami. Right? How did you break in? Like, how did you not let your color change what you wanted to do?
I mean, I
If that
never
makes
even,
sense.
yeah. I mean, it does, but it doesn't because I, to me, it was never about,
The color
like, I
of the
never
skin.
saw myself anything other than being like a part of the culture, you know. Like, to me, you know, Latinos are an integral part of hip hop, and I don't think it's whether you're a black Latino or mulatto or white Latino. Like, I don't think that matters to me. I think Latinos are a part of the culture, and we've contributed, and we've been there from the beginning, and you know, and I think everybody has, you know, a right to be a part of hip hop culture. But I think, but I do, because I'm Latino, I always, you know, talk more on behalf of Latinos. Like, yeah, we definitely deserve our spot at the table, you know, without a doubt. Ain't nobody ever gonna take that away. If you think about a lot of, you know, the influences in hip hop or a lot of things about hip hop, like if you look at early footage or you look at Wild Style or look at breaking or anything, you know, you're gonna see Latinos in all of that.
Yeah, especially with like crazy legs going in, like during the break dance and stuff. You know what I mean?
And I don't think, and you know, and I always take it back. Like, I don't think anybody ever stopped and said, "Hey, you know, you're too light of a Latino to be here." You know, like to me, the skin color, and you know, of in terms of even specifically the Latinos, doesn't matter. You know what I'm saying? You're Latino, you know, you have every right to be a part of the culture if it's something that's really comes natural to you. You know, like if you're like that's my thing. Like growing up, like later on when like people started doing more of the like Latin stuff, that didn't speak to me. It was just, you know, just I was just a regular hip hop head.
So
So,
you wasn't doing the merengue mixtapes, man? The bachata
nah,
mixtapes and
nah,
all
nah,
that?
nah. See, so when I like, so I'll tell you, like I started hearing hip hop from, you know, even from elementary school, just not knowing much about the culture, just hearing it as a music coming in. So it's like I have an array of music. Like, I always liked music. So my older cousins would listen to disco at that time. It was a disco era. Of course, my mom would listen to, like, you know, Cuban music, like, you know, where it's salsa or some of the there's like other specific, you know, stuff that's from Cuba. And I also listened, like, I like punk and rock and shit like that too, because it was just like I was looking for whatever, you know, spoke to me at the time. And when I was probably like sixth, seventh, eighth grade, I was actually a skater. And
A skater
it was
like a rollerblader or a skateboarder?
no, a skateboarder.
Okay,
Like, I
okay.
was heavy into skateboard culture.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved that, you know, like that was my culture. I was definitely a horrible skater though.
No
I
skills,
mean,
no
I wouldn't say
skills.
I was horrible, but I wasn't one of the best ones. But I was like totally into the culture of skateboarding. Like, I just liked counterculture kind of culture, you know what I'm saying? If that makes sense. And through skateboarding, you know, let's say I have a mixtape at that time. That mixtape's gonna have fucking Iron Maiden, Megadeth, Beastie Boys, LL Cool J, Dougie Fresh, MC Shy D, 2 Live Crew, and you know, and then like some other fucking crazy punk rock shit. Mm-hmm. That's my mixtape at the time. And through other skaters, I'm starting to hear more and more hip hop, and I'm actually hearing the word hip hop for the first time from another skater.
Okay.
Because at that time, it's just rap music coming through.
Yep. Yeah, it was just considered rap. Nobody had the lingo for hip-hop either.
Yeah, so, you know, this is like maybe what? Early mid-80s for me in Miami. So you know, like I hear, like I remember some dude asking, like, you know, well, what kind of music you into? And I tell him, oh, I like this, I like that, you know, rap, I like this. And I go, what are you into? He's like, oh, I'm into hip-hop. And I'm like, whoa, that just sounded so crazy to me. And then he started breaking it down. Like I said, it was another skater, and he happened to be a graffiti writer too. Mm-hmm. And so then from that point on, I started to kind of like shift over more into looking at the rap music, but seeing it as the greater culture, and kind of like trying to find out more about it. And what the way it spoke to me is that I like music so much, and I love music how it kind of like it defined eras in history. Cause I was like kind of like a borderline history buff too. Like I was interested in like history, mm-hmm. more modern history than anything. Like at the time, like I liked war history, like the Vietnam era and World War II and shit like that. I was into war for obvious reasons. Cause that was my connection kind of like to my dad.
Yeah. That was your dad there. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but I would watch a lot of those war movies, and in those war movies, they defined the era by like the music they played in the movie.
Yep.
And so I saw hip hop as like, oh shit, this is the music of my generation. This is the music that's going to define my era. So when they make a movie about the 80s or later in the 90s, you know, in the future, they're going to play this music. And I'm a part of it.
Yeah, and you wanted to
do
more.
I'm a part of this history.
You wanted to be more than part of the history, though. Like, you took it a step further and said, like...
Well, no, at first, as a fan, I just wanted to be completely, like, well-schooled in it. Mm-hmm. And
so,
be like
so get the
a real
knowledge.
Fan of music, yeah, and have knowledge of it. So I became, and then you know, first I'm just a fan of the music. Then my next step was like, okay, you know, what's going on locally? Because I know New York's doing its thing, I see LA doing its thing, Chicago's starting to bubble, Atlanta's starting to bubble. But what about Miami? I know we got Two Life Crew, but then I'm starting to get more into like lyrics and the boom bap side of things. You know, we're not calling it boom bap; it's all hip hop at this time. Yep. But I'm getting more into lyrics and a certain style of hip hop. So then I'm like, okay, what's Miami doing? And Miami was kind of like a joke to the greater hip hop community. So I started supporting whatever I could find in Miami that was doing hip hop and repping Miami. So then I'm still on fan mode. Mm-hmm. Then as time goes on, and now I'm in high school, and you know, and I'm getting towards like maybe junior year or whatever. Then I start to think of like, okay, well, I don't see people repping it the way I really want them to rep. I mean, there's some people that were repping it and then they stopped. And I mean the local scene. And so then that's when I put it, you know, upon myself, all right, I want to try and do this. Like, I want to try to rep the scene. I want to try to put Miami on the map in my own way. And that's when I started to, you know, I created my company, Crazy Hood Productions. That was before I even started DJing, because I didn't have the money for turntables. And then I got the DJ starter kit in the back of the Source magazine.
What was that? What was that? A cheap mixer and like a couple speakers, or what? Like, how did that?
Yeah, it was like fuck, man, I forget now. I always know the name. It was like a belt drive turntable, and
wait, did you order that or did your parents order it?
No, I ordered it. I mean, I you know, I got some money here and there. I forgot how I got the money at the time. I remember I worked like
saved
like
it
a job passing out flyers for like a fucking pizza shop or some shit. Yeah. And then, you know, I used to hustle a little at the end of high school, and like right out of high school, I used to hustle a little bit, and that's how I used to pull money. I had all kinds of hustles too. You know, I did a little bit of, you know, selling some butt, I sold some this, sold some that, and all kinds of
the 80s, the 80s, right? Like,
well, this is the 90s.
Oh, so
this is like
80s 90, to the 90s when you were just making it by. I mean, I think that's what, to me, the hip hop golden era is like the 90s, like the early 90s, you know what I mean? When Biggie,
yeah,
Pop,
yeah,
and
no,
stuff like that.
I love that era.
And I think that's when we tried everything. I think that's when we tried everything to survive, man. Like, yep. all the hustles came out, you know what I mean?
So, yeah, so that's how I basically got involved, man. That's you know, that's kind of like the short version of the story, as long as it sounded, but it's the short version.
Now, it's crazy because what I heard there was so many lessons that we could pass on to our kids, right? So the first thing is, like, you found something culturally that really called you, right? And you said you wanted to be involved. And being involved was at first just learning about the culture, you know, parlaying in the culture. And then you said, well, now I got to go. I got to be more in the culture. Like, I got to represent more. So I'm going to go start DJing. So it's almost like the beginning is when you're talking to your kids about being themselves, like being their authentic self, is to actually look at what you want to represent and be proud of it. Right. Like, I think you did that with hip hop, where it was like, I'm coming in. I'm going to learn this because I have this much respect for it. Right. And then I'm going to go add my own style to it. And I think that's something that schools can't teach our kids.
No, absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like that goes to you. So now your daughter comes up to you in the future and tells you, Dad, you know, I love hip hop, man. This is cool. But I ain't rocking with it, man. I'm going back to some Roomba music or something, man. Like, how would you keep her on the straight and narrow to go chase her dreams?
No, I would just tell her, and this is based off of my experience in life, is that whatever you're into, just make sure you're really, like, wholeheartedly into that shit. Like, that it speaks to you, and that you live and breathe that shit, and that you're willing to take L's left and right because that's how much you love it. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what I would tell her. The one thing I had kids late because I was really, I really wanted to really be in a stable and mature place in my life to have kids because of my experience growing up with my parents and shit. But I was lucky enough that even though I had kids late, I had my friends were having kids left and right, and I was able to be godfather to three of my boys' daughters, and you know, and I learned a lot through being a godfather, and I was able to kind of be a parent in, you know, in a distant way, in that way. Mm-hmm. But one thing that happened is, you know, my goddaughters are older now. They're like 22 and 20 or something like that. And the other one's like 17. And one of my goddaughters wanted to pursue acting. And my boy was like, yo, can you talk to her and give her some advice? And I told her the same thing. I said, if you want to be an actress, that's cool. But you should look into going to some kind of acting school. You should love this shit like nobody's business. You know, do it because you love the art of acting. You want to be a fucking thespian.
Yeah.
And know and be ready that you're probably going to be broke. That the percentage of people that make it in the acting world is fucking a minute percent that you just happen to see. But really, most people don't make money doing that shit.
Yeah.
And it's going to be hard.
Same thing with the music, right? Same thing with the music.
Same thing with sports, all that shit. So I told her, I said, so if you're going to take that route, this is what you need to know. And I'm not saying this to turn you away. I'm just saying this so you can be mentally prepared to deal with it and that you know in your heart that you love this shit so much, you're willing to go through those trials and tribulations. And you know what? She decided not to do it.
Do you think it was because she thought about it more, or do you think maybe you talking to her about it struck a little fear? Like, sometimes we as parents, we overdo on the realness, right? Where now we like, it's almost like, don't be afraid, but be afraid.
Right. I mean, I don't think that I don't think she was scared. I think she thought of it and really said, you know, really like talk to herself. Like, do I really love it that much? You know, because again, this is my goddaughter, so I've known her all her fucking life. And I never heard her talking about being an actor.
Yeah.
So I don't know, you know, I don't know that this is something that she had a life's passion for.
Yeah. How hard is she going to go?
Right. So maybe she just thought about it, you know, maybe she's like, okay, maybe I'm not ready for this, you know, like maybe this is not, you know, who knows? She might change her mind next year, but right now she's in, you know, university and fucking sports broadcasting is what she's studying.
Dope.
So yeah, I mean, I just think that I gave her the realness. I don't think I try to like overdo it or give her fear. I just gave her the real, like it's just 100% real, because what people see out of successful people is just the successful part, but they don't see all the fucking trials and tribulations people go through and all the heartbreaks and all the people that fucking undermine people trying to, you know, chase their dreams, and all the naysayers and the family members that don't believe in it because they actually care about you. So that's why they don't, they are always trying to derail you from following your dreams, because they want you to follow something safer.
Yeah. And they want the best for you. They don't know, they sometimes don't know what the best look like, but they want the best for you.
Right. So all that is difficult. And I just wanted to present all this to her so she knew it, because I went through it so she wouldn't have to. Mm-hmm.
You ever, you know, you mentioned even like families as naysayers, right? You ever had any family members look at you and tell you, dogs, like why hip hop? Like, did they ever try to question you and say, stay away from hip hop? Because I'm a hip hop dude, and my dad pushed me to do hip hop. My mom, you know, forced me to like focus on the culture. But then like my mother-in-law was like, what the hell are you doing? Like, you're a computer dude. Go focus on computers. I was like, nah, man, I could do both. You know what I mean? So you ever have anybody in the family like question your choice?
Yeah, no, absolutely. My whole family questioned it to an extent. They just wanted, you know, for me to go to college, mm-hmm. or try to go to college and pick some kind of career and just go the safe route, basically. So when you tell someone you're going to do something that's kind of like the arts, and then on top of that, you're trying to tell, you know, these Cuban immigrants that you're doing something called hip hop, and then they're looking at, they're only seeing what's being told to them about what rap music is by the media. And, you know, and then they hear the lyrics out of context when you're bumping it out of your room, then yeah, you know, they're like, yo, I don't know about this shit.
While you're bumping some Luke.
Yeah, I mean, I was bumping 2 Live Crew and NWA like it was nobody's business.
Yo, no, it's funny because I laugh, and, you know, I always ask dads, like, what's too real? Like, how real do we keep it? And my dad, my first introduction to hip hop was an NWA vinyl. Right. So I'm over here playing vinyl music through NWA, and my mom, she doesn't know English, so she doesn't care what's going on. But I still remember to this day my neighbors knocking on my door asking my dad why. Why was I 6 years old listening to NWA? And he was like, that's what he likes. You know what I mean? He gave him that Spanish accent, like, yo, that's what he likes. What can I do about it? So how much is too real, man? Like, is there a age limit to hip hop? Like, for me, with my kids, when I used to drive down the block with my youngest, I would play censored music. Like, I would have kid bops, right? But I realized very quickly that it wasn't for me. Now, when I have my youngest in the car, you know, my oldest is in the car, I'll play music, whatever. I'll play whatever I want to play. But when my 7-year-old is in there, I kind of like minimize it a little bit, but it's still full of curses. Like, what's too much? Is there a limit? Because I don't think there is.
I mean, I don't know, man. We talk a lot about this on Fatherhood. And it's kind of, we're conflicted, or I'm not going to speak for them. I'm a little conflicted sometimes, because my initial thoughts of this are, you should just play everything under the sun for your children.
Yeah.
Because I listened, you know, yeah, look, I'm not a fucking saint. So I can't start this conversation and say I was a fucking saint in life and I didn't do anything fucking wrong, because that would be a fucking lie.
That'd be ludicrous.
I did wild out, but I do feel that, you know, my mom being a single mother and doing what she could, she did her best. And I think she did enough to fucking kind of like, you know, instill certain morals and you know, just certain direction for me that helped me even navigate, even when I did wild out, that I didn't go off the deep end, you know? Mm-hmm. Because of my respect for my mother. To be quite honest with you, the reason why I probably didn't go completely off the deep end, which I was on the verge of, is because at the end of the day, I had so much respect for all the shit my mom had to deal with as a single parent, that I didn't, and because I knew that my family didn't want her to leave my dad all this shit, that I didn't want my mom to look bad if I ended up in prison.
So you didn't want to embarrass her.
I didn't want to embarrass. That's one of the things that kept me away from going all the way in too deep. Mm-hmm. And so I think that, and so I look back at that and I think about, if you really like, and if you have both parents in the house, you know, or at least two parents or a full family there, if you love your kids, you truly, you know, give them a lot of love and you try to talk to them intelligently and try to instill, you know, morals, good morals in them, and you do all of that, I don't think there's anything, music or any outside influence, that can completely fuck them up. Now, of course, there's chances of mistakes, of things happening. You know, there's all kinds of variables in life. But I think percentage-wise, they're going to have the better chances of avoiding a lot of life's pitfalls, no matter what's thrown at them, if there's that, you know, foundation there that given by the parents.
Yeah. So what you're saying is, if you set that foundation, no matter how early on in their lives or how often you play some hip hop music, let's say it's the most ratchet music out there, they should still be able to distinguish what they can and can't do based on the foundation that you gave them. I agree 1,000%. Yeah. Like, I think if you're leaving a child on the street to do their thing and they're listening to whatever music it is, because all music could have negative messaging and it could have positive messaging, right?
Absolutely.
But if they're on the street, they're going to gravitate towards the negative shit. You know what I mean?
Right.
But if you're giving them some guidance, then they'll know, well, you know, this dude is talking about pulling out the gun and shooting. That ain't my dad, so I don't got to do that shit. You know what I mean?
Like, right. And if, like, you know. And if you let them understand, like, that's the one thing my mom was kind of cool about. Like, my mom is, like, real artsy, so she was always, like, on this, like, artsy tip, and I kind of, like, understood what art was, what art and culture was at a very young age. Mm-hmm. So I could look and listen to the music, you know, even though, yeah, of course, you know, late 80s, early 90s, you know, the whole Keeping It Real era, you're thinking that these people are doing all this crazy shit for real, and some of them were. Yeah. But I could still distinguish that this is art, and I can listen to this art. I don't have to do as the art says, you know?
Yeah. That's
I can
that's
stand
line
on
right
my
there.
Own 2 feet, you know, and that's the thing too. Like, you want to try to raise, you know, confident people, you know, these kids to be confident in their own shoes, that they're not easily influenced by other things. So, you know, I can listen to Fuck the Police. It didn't mean I was going to go to a cop and be like, yo, fuck you, motherfucker, which I might have done a couple times in my life, but I wasn't going out there and doing all this crazy shit that I heard and saw in videos or heard in music because of this foundation, I feel, you know, like, and like I said, I'm not perfect. And of course I had my pitfalls, but I think that I avoided the ultimate pitfalls because of what my mom, what she had instilled in me.
Nah, I'm with you, man. I'm with you 1,000% because I grew up as that kid that, you know, I had both parents there. I listened to a lot of hip hop. You know, my father shielded me from poverty. You know what I mean? Like, I still had like the coolest sneakers out and all that. But a lot of the parents didn't want their kids with me because I listened to so much hip hop at a young age. And
right.
It was funny because my dad used to sit me down and tell me, don't worry about it, you'll be good. And now as I got older, I get to look back and look at some of the parents that said, you know, little Johnny shouldn't chill with James. Now little Johnny's in jail. James isn't. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it was like that misconception of, yo, just because you listen to it, your life is going to be fucked. And it's like, nah, man. Like, my dad taught me better than that. You know, my mom taught me better than that. And it's just crazy to hear that this is the norm. Like, this is the norm for us. Like, we, you know, you got to learn how to, you have to learn how to teach your kids to be able to take the music and how to decipher what's right and what's not. You know what I mean? And I think that's hard. I think that's really hard. But if you're involved, then it makes it a little bit easier. Like, I think if you just let them rock to the music, you know, they could get lost.
Now, we do as parents in like as life and as modern, whatever age, as things evolve, we do have to take into consideration that there's different things in today's age that kids are getting, you know, influenced by. And, you know, social media to be the main thing. So we do have to be, you know, we can't be naive, because I feel like we're the generation, and I don't know how old you are, but I'm assuming we're within 10 years apart, at least.
I'm 40. I'm a 1980 baby.
Yeah, I'm 44, about to be 45 in May.
Yeah.
So I feel like we're the generation that lived pre, you know, high-tech world and social media, and post kind of, and we understand it.
Yeah.
You know, so because we know what it is before, we know what it is after, we have to kind of understand that also changes the game of parenting as well, that our parents didn't have to deal with.
Yeah.
Where we could stay up and think, yeah, because our kids could follow somebody that they look up to on social media, on YouTube or whatever the fuck, or a fucking new app that we don't even fucking know about. And that could change the game in a negative way.
Yeah, I mean, that's Tinder. You know, Tinder. Like, I'm so happy my son is only 13, bro. Because people joke around, and, you know, when I talk with dads, a lot of dads say, yo, I got a daughter. You know, I got my gun ready. 18 is on. I'm the opposite. I look at it as, yo, I got my son. I got my gun ready. You know what I mean? Even though he's a boy, it's still like, yo, I know what I would have done with this generation or this generation of tech. I don't want him doing that. You know what I'm saying? And it's one of those like realizations where it's like, damn, like we have it harder than our parents, but in a sense we have it easier too, which is kind of dope.
And we still also, we don't know what the ramifications are for the kids that grow up in it, because we didn't grow up in it. So that's the one thing we're not sure of yet. Yeah. We don't know, because these kids are born and raised indoctrinated in this new social media world, and we don't know the effects of that yet.
How has social media affected you? Like, have you ever had to deal with do you deal with a lot of trolls?
Thankfully, man, and I knock on fucking wood, I haven't dealt with a lot of trolls. Mm-hmm. And surprisingly so, because I did expect when Drink Champs took off to get, you know, a certain amount of trolls. But luckily, it's been pretty limited. But I have dealt with it throughout, before Drink Champs, you know, even going back to fucking analog days.
I dealt with trolls. I'm sure you did.
There's always going to be a fucking hater out there.
Always.
And the scary part about social media is that, you know, and I still have, and I have trouble even dealing with it, because I don't know how people could just negate these trolls or these haters completely, because the scary part about it is that you don't know how serious or not these people sometimes are when they talk crazy. And when you have a family, to me, like, I don't give a fuck me by myself. Like, I give the fuck about a troll, about a hater talking crazy. You could step to me any time of the day. We're out in the streets. That's what it comes down to. You know, I know usually it's just people just talking crap online, and I don't worry about it. But having a family and having people talk wild online, to me, is a whole other level of shit. Because you don't know, if you're out with your family, if this person is really mentally unstable. Like, I'll give you an example. And this is pre-Drink Champs and everything. I put out an album in 2015 called Another Time. Mm-hmm. And I had, I don't know, like 50 artists on there, you know, from Bum B to Juvenile to Talib Kweli to Red Man. I had a ton of artists on
there. It was a classic, too. It was a classic, too. It was part of that catalog, man.
Thank you. So I had this fucking irate, weird dude. And mind you, this album, you know, it sold moderately. It was just a passion project I put out. It wasn't anything that, you know, went double platinum or anything like that. It's just something I put out there into the world because I wanted to create it. And this, I get this dude who hits me up on, I believe it was on Facebook. Mm-hmm. He starts fucking messaging me on Facebook, and he starts telling me that I'm the Antichrist and that I made all his favorite artists who are on my album sell their souls, you know, in a blood pact to be on my album, and that he's going to decapitate me when he sees me.
Yo, people are crazy, bro.
Yo, I'm like, so me, because, you know, at that time I got no kids, you know, just me, I give the fuck about it. I thought this shit was hilarious, you know? Yeah. So I'm clowning the dude, I always tell my boys, man, because I had read it back then, we had meetings and shit, and I had a meeting with my crew, and I go, yo, I'm going to read this to you guys. And I read it. It was like a fucking, like I was reading a comedy skit, like, because I started to respond to the dude just as crazy as he was talking to me, you know?
Yeah, but yeah,
I was saying funny shit back to him, though. I wasn't saying violent shit. I was just saying funny shit, like, oh, you're going to decapitate me? But you should cut my leg off first, though, don't you think?
You were treating it like a game, but still getting your thoughts out.
Yeah, and the dude was, he was getting so frustrated. He's like, oh, you think this shit's funny? I'm a fucking, I got a fucking bulldog, and I'm going to feed your fucking, your penis is fucking to my dog. And this, the dude was just talking so crazy, dude. And you could tell he was genuinely upset, and he genuinely thought that I had did a blood pact with his favorite artist to be on my album.
You made an enemy for life, bro.
But now that I have kids, that shit to me isn't as funny, because someone who has the time and to sit there and message someone they don't know and start to say all this irate, crazy shit, and this is straight up threatening my life. That's just not funny when I have kids.
Yeah, and it's crazy because trolling has become a sport.
Oh yeah, it's a complete sport. It's a culture in its own.
But it's like you said, like I tell my son all the time, like trolling, like you guys like to troll. You like to jump online, talk trash. The era that I come from, you can't easily get away from that trash talk by saying, nope. Yo, I'm sorry, I was just trolling.
No, that doesn't work.
That doesn't work. And that's something that I think we, you know, like you mentioned, and it was funny, you know, it's funny to hear that story. But then on the flip side, it's like you said, as a father, how do you know when somebody's joking and they're not? So you have to take everybody almost like serious. You know what I mean?
I take everything serious. I take everything like that serious. I don't engage in it. And I just take it serious because that's my duty to my family. And, you know, other people be like, oh, I don't care. Or I just, you know, or I engage them. And I don't even engage them because most of the time it's going to be someone that's mentally unstable or they're just bored and they're acting out their like their alter ego, you know?
Yeah, it's so hard though. Like it's so hard to like sometimes just like block them out. You know what I mean? Like it's difficult because I feel you. Like sometimes I'll look at some of these comments that I get and I'll actually write back to the person, yo, are you serious? Because we're in the same city. And if I see you, I need to know how serious you are so I could protect my family. And then they'll write back to me something dumb like, oh, I was just kidding. And it's like, dog, stop playing like that.
Well, no, yeah, that's the funny part. Most of the mild trolls or haters or whatever the fuck that hit me up, when I fucking engage them, like I actually respond. Like if someone talks to me and they don't talk irate, like if they're sending me a message and it's not irate but it's still some kind of hating bullshit, I'll engage them, you know. Mm-hmm. And most of the time, 9 out of 10 times, they're like, oh shit, I didn't even respond. My bad, yo. I'm not really hating, man. Oh my, you know, and that's usually the response I'll get.
At least I got your attention. And it's like, no, you got the attention for the wrong reasons, man. That's not the way to do it.
Yeah, but we definitely live in a world where it's like where the virtual world and the real world are really just they're coming together because it's we live and breathe the virtual world. So you have to take all these people serious because things that happen in the virtual world impact the real world. We see it with politics. We see it with you know, anything you could think of, business, whatever. So you got to take people that, you know, troll you or hate on you online, and you got to take them as serious threats, unfortunately.
Yeah, you know, one of my, I'm just going to ask you a couple more questions because I know we both on the run. You know, talking about trolling, it almost leads me to the discussion of bullying. Like we come from the hip hop world, right? Like we breathe hip hop. In hip hop, when somebody steps to you, the first thing that you do is you react, right? How are we going to teach our kids about bullying and trolling online? Like how are you going to approach that without straight up saying, "Yo, go punch the dude"?
Yeah, I think that's tough to even answer now because I have a toddler and I have a baby that hasn't been born yet. So we don't know what that virtual world is going to look like when they're at that age really engaging. But I don't know, man. I really think that we as fucking as a society, we need to figure this shit the fuck out because this shit is going nowhere good fast and it's breeding a lot. Yeah, like the online bullying shit and suicide rates going up for kids because of it. Like, you know, I tell like a lot of people, I'm like, you know, I have some younger friends that were like our interns and now they're older, but I used to always tell them like, man, you guys have it lucky, man. When we wanted to fucking holler at a chick, we had to holler at a chick
in her to face. Prove your worth.
You guys can fucking sit there and, you know, virtually do it, like send a fucking message, email. I mean, you know, even when it was just email, you could have just sent an email, you know, or you didn't even have to ask for a number. You could fucking ask a friend from school, what's their email? You know, and that's the thing. Like, people, it's so easy for them to do shit and think that there's no consequence because it's so impersonal. We don't know what the future is going to hold in that shit, man. So I don't know. I really don't know how to answer your question. I don't know what tools to give my kid because I don't know what those tools are going to be. You know, what are the social tools that they're going to be using? And one thing that I said recently online, I'd be saying brain fart of the day because I just get these dumb philosophical ideas and blurt them out online. And one thing I said is, you know, like, what did I say exactly? I said something like, fuck, actually, let me see if I look it up. It's something to do with like, like our generation, we use these things, these platforms as tools. Mm-hmm. But unfortunately, other people are being, oh man, what the fuck did I say, man? I thought it was fucking pretty decent. If I can't say so myself.
Yeah, because I think like us, like you just said, our generation, we use it as tools, like to connect with people and get our thoughts across. They just use it as a form of communication. It's almost like Twitter could be here today and gone tomorrow for the younger kids, where it's like it's not their main. Like they don't use the tool for more than just talking.
Yeah, here I found what I wrote. I wrote, there's a difference between those that take advantage of the tools and those being taken advantage by the tool makers.
Mm, yep. And that's the trolls. And the trolls are getting taken advantage of.
Well, really, this is beyond trolling. This is just everybody in general, people that believe everything they see in social media, you know, because you're only seeing a snippet of someone's life. So you think, oh, that person's life is dope and my life sucks.
Yeah, you see the highlights. You know? Yeah.
Right, so one of the things, the one thing we do have to instill in our children is we have to let them understand, like, utilize these free tools for how they benefit you in, you know, in school and work and whatever, but understand that these are just tools for you to use and not be used by them, because at the end of the day, these platforms are also taking your data, your privacy is being, you know, compromised, you know, these social media platforms are being built by governments now, like, you know, TikTok. The Chinese government has its hand in it, and that's not conspiracy, that's reality. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if we can have our children kind of understand this at a young age, then hopefully kind of like the same thing we're talking about music and that the music won't influence them, hopefully these platforms won't influence them the same way. They could see it for what it really is.
Yeah, and I think it goes back to what you were saying earlier. It's almost like if we instill this great foundation or a foundation that's like a work in progress where every day we're adding to it, then things like this won't affect them as much as we worry, right?
Right.
Where it's like, I'm worried that my son, you know, will do the dumbest things on social media, like sell something or buy something and get beat up over it or whatever. But because he's always around me, maybe he'll learn not to do that. You know what I mean? Where it's almost like, nah, dad wouldn't do that, so I ain't doing it either. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not messing with it.
And one more thing too, man, like we have to, and I say this to like our generation of hip hop heads and entertainers or whatever, if you're in the industry or not in the industry, we got to stop worrying about looking like the old heads, because I have a lot of peers that want to stay relevant. They want to, you know, make it seem like they're still young. And I feel like, I always say, I feel like that's, if we complain about the music today, it's our generation's fault, because we didn't want to become OGs. We wanted to stay YGs forever.
Yeah, I love that. You know? That's a fact. Yeah.
You know, and so we gotta be unafraid of looking old, because you know what? Fucking, it's real. We're getting old. So, you know, we can get old gracefully. There's no problem. Doesn't, you know, to me, and this goes back to like doing art, like art doesn't age, bro. Like, you know, you can be a content creator, you can be a creator, you could be an artist forever. No one can put a fucking time cap on that, because art is timeless. You know, fucking, you could die and your art can pop for fucking the young people after you've been dead 100 years.
Yeah, and it's happening like crazy, and it's been happening.
Yeah, but when people are afraid to say things like, you know, like maybe diss social media or say this and say that because, oh, I don't want to look like an old head. Like, that's the problem that we have, man. That too many people, you know, of our generation who are hip hop heads for the most part, because I can only speak on that. You know, I can't say what's going on in the rock world, but for hip hop heads, we oftentimes are afraid of looking and sounding old. When we got to understand, man, we need to be OGs to these young kids. Ooh. They need someone. We need to be that lighthouse, because they may not listen today, but if we stay consistent with our message, that message will kick in later for them and might save their life before they go off the deep end.
It's a fact. It's a fact. I mean, I mean, how many of us could say that we listened to everything our pops and our moms told us when we were young? Like, it's now that we're older, we look back and we say, oh, damn, we get it. Like, I get it. I get what you were doing. And it took some time. Like, you know, our only hope or our only saving grace would be that they get it earlier than us. But as long as they get it, we good. We succeeded. You know what I mean? We succeeded. So last question before I let you go, man. You get to hang out with some really dope ass people, bro. As a legend, As a legend, I'm gonna tell you right now, you are a legend, and I think you know that.
Appreciate
but you are the legend. You get to, you have access to some really, really, really dope people. How are you gonna teach your kids to be as humbled as you are?
I mean, bro, it's very simple. We all bleed the same blood, breathe the same oxygen, drink the same water, shit and piss. There's no fucking reason to not be humble in this world, because life will fucking humble you in 2.5 seconds. I could be sitting with legends today, and I could be fucking squatting tomorrow because for whatever, because fucking COVID-19 ruined my life.
Yep, exactly. Exactly. Like,
so there's no reason to not be humble, man. I don't, all that shit about people being Hollywood or whatever, like, don't get me wrong. Like, there's, I've seen it firsthand because I've been behind the scenes and in front of the scenes. And people, you know, like big celebrities, they become crazy because, like I told you, like that one crazy guy that messaged me and said I was the Antichrist. Imagine if someone like Kanye, the type of crazy people and how many people hit him up daily and do all kinds of crazy shit. So that makes those people become partially insane.
Yeah.
And that's why they kind of act Hollywood sometimes, because they kind of lose it. But other than that reason, there's no reason why, you know, we shouldn't all be humble, because, like I said, life will fucking humble you in a heartbeat.
Yeah, and it goes back to what you were saying earlier, bro. It starts with us, right? Like, if we give them that foundation of, yo, we could chill next to Jay-Z and still treat him like a regular person, like Sean Carter, then we good. You know what I mean? Like, that's how our kids will learn, man. Because my kids get to, you know, my kids ask me all the time, like, who are you talking to today? You know, who are you talking to today? And when I tell them the names, they're like, oh, my God, that's pretty dope. And then it's like, yo, Jaden, we good. I got no influence on him.
But the same should go on the opposite direction too. Like, we should also instill in our kids that they shouldn't be like fucking, in, you know, all and starstruck by people. I mean, they could be a fan of somebody, like a genuine fan, and they can appreciate someone's art. But that person is just a human, just like they are, and they're flawed humans, just like we are. You know,
facts, man. Is letting them know that it's like you said earlier, man. We all bleed. We all bleed the same color, man. The same blood. You know what I mean? Like, we all bleeding red right now. So that, you know, that's something my dad taught me early on, how to be humble. But he also taught me that with the bullying and the fighting, where it was like, yo, if you have to protect yourself, just remember that they bleed just like you. You know, now the difference is how you make them bleed. So yeah, man, that was so dope, bro. You know what's next for Fatherhoods, man? Like, I already know what's going on with Drink Champs. You guys are on a rocket ship. Y'all not going to stop. What's next for Fatherhoods?
I mean, just with Fatherhood Podcast, man, we're just going to keep enjoying our conversations. It really just started as me being a first-time father and you know, calling up my boy Keather and my boy Manny and just talking, you know, like, what can I expect? Like, talking shop, fatherhood shop. And we were like, fuck it, man. Let's create a podcast about it and let's just do it, because, it goes back to everything I said before. We do it from the heart. We don't do it because we get all kinds of views and listens, or because we're expecting this, that, and the other. We do it from the heart, and you keep doing something, you're consistent, it'll pay off in the long run, and it's something positive. So, you know, we got Fatherhood Podcast, and I produce a ton of podcasts for people. I'm actually in my office right now, and we got a podcast studio here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I preach the podcast gospel. Like, everybody should give it a shot. If you got something to say, man, might as well just recorded and put it out there, man. You know, there's no reason not to.
Yeah, man, I agree. I mean, like, you know, when I came into the scene to do fatherhood stuff, not the tech stuff, guys were probably the only podcast, and probably still are the only podcast that I listen to. And people would ask me, they're like, yo, like, why you listen to their podcast? And it's like, yo, because we all need those different voices, man. Like, these dudes are representing, to me, you guys are like the OGs when it comes to the hip-hop fatherhood podcast stuff. And, you know, I show nothing but love and respect, man. Like, we need more voices. Like, there's not enough of us, to be honest.
Yeah, man, for sure.
Now, that doesn't mean they all could compete, though. They all could come in here and lend their voice. Right. But, you know, leave the money to us, man. That would be nice.
Yeah. I mean, it's still a business. It's still competition, for sure. But you know, it's all friendly competition. Like I said, I welcome everybody. I try to, like, I learned again. This is another thing that I've learned in my experiences. Like, don't try to hoard information. Don't try to, you know, get ahead of people by, you know, just not giving out information. Like, if you got information, give it out, man. Like, I do believe in karma. I believe in all that shit. Like, there was a time where I was that competitive person and that, that person, you know, like on some strategy, like, nah, fuck that. Like, fuck everybody. Like, we going to just do it on our own. And, you know, life humbled me at one point. And I said, you know what, man? Like, that ain't the way. You know, if I got information, fuck it. You might not appreciate it, and you might take my information and run. But, you know, karma's a bitch. Karma will get you later down the road. You know?
Yeah, nah, I love it. I love it. So so you're doing that next with Fatherhoods. What's the best way for people to contact you, man, if they want to hit you up?
I mean, Instagram, Twitter, like, you know, just follow me on there. It's at Who's Crazy on Instagram and at DJ EFN on Twitter. And then the Facebooks, you can do Crazy Hood Productions. Mm. And then crazyhood.com is our website. And we got an email, info@crazyhood.com. You could actually hit me there and I'll be able to see that as well.
Man, you're everywhere, man. Everywhere. Once again, I want to thank you for being here, but also for having me on episode 22, man. Like, that was one of
Nah, we're going to definitely have you back, man, for sure.
Yeah, that was one of my fondest moments, bro. Like, I have my friend who's heavy in hip-hop. He loves hip-hop. I won't name his name. And he came to me and he goes, James, I love that you were on Good Morning America. I love that you were on all these shows. But I'm super impressed that you were on Fatherhoods, the podcast.
Yeah, that's dope.
And I couldn't, when he said that, I couldn't believe it, bro. I was like, what? Like, all those other things and you chose that? He was like, yo, they sick. They represent. And I was like, yo, you're right. I'll give them that. You know what I mean? So thank you. It was an honor, bro. It was an honor to have you on that. And it's an honor to have you on here, bro. For real. Thank you for your time.
No, man. I appreciate you too, though.
Yeah. So to the community, you know what it is, man. DJ EFN came through, took his time to talk to us about hip hop, his come up, fatherhood, and more. So y'all know what y'all got to do. Jump on there, show him some love, make your presence felt. We matter. Let's get it. Fatherhood is lit.